better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.
We are live. Welcome, folks, to episode 3562 today of the Survival Podcast. We're going to talk about waking people up today. Honest to God, we're going to talk more about why you shouldn't bother, why you should just leave them sleep. Am I saying not to help them? Am I saying to stop speaking the truth? Am I saying to stop being curious and pulling on every thread and learning as much as you can about what's really going on? Am I saying to get into the matrix with them and go back to sleep in your pod? Not at all. What I've realized in my many years of life at this point is the most frustrating thing in the world you can do to yourself is to know you're right about a thing and try to do something about the thing you're right about in a way that ensures that you will absolutely never achieve what you're trying to achieve. It's like being a fly in a window, right? What does the fly want? The fly that's in the window is like, I don't know where this place is, but it's not working out really well in here. There seems to be giant things that want to kill me, and I can see all that stuff outside, and you know, they clean this place up, so there's nothing to eat in here to make babies in, and I got to get out there. So that fly wants to get out there. He absolutely knows. In his little fly brain, in his little fly eyes, all like 9 million eyes, as he looks through that window, that is the place he wants to be. And as a fly, he can't comprehend glass. There's no glass in nature. The closest thing we have in nature to glass would be water or maybe ice, right? Like, there is no thing you can see through in nature and you can't go. That's why birds fly into buildings, right? Or John Dewey walks into windows, right? Because they don't comprehend in the small brain that that barrier is there. So that fly is just... Now, that, if you let that fly go long enough, that fly doesn't have to be killed, right? He'll kill himself. He'll wear himself out, and you'll find him, you know, legs up on the ground. But when we're trying to help people who are oblivious to what really goes on in the world, understand what really goes on in the world, we're not going to die. But it's the same frustrating experience. Just hammering on that glass and knowing if I could just get through this thing, this force field, I would get to where I want to be. Now, let me ask you a question. Is that fly ever going to move that window? If that fly gives it all he's got, everything, 110%, just die faster. If the fly was able to go out and convinced 20 of his fly friends, let's all get together and push on this field at the same time in unison. A fly was capable of that. It's not happening, is it? What about 100 flies? You can put enough flies to completely cover the surface of the window. There's no room left for any more flies. That window's still not going anywhere. As far as it goes down at the fly level, that barrier is impermeable. That fly can't get through it. Him and 1,000 flies can't, 10,000 flies can't move that window. They can't do it. It might as well be you on a Starship Enterprise and they put up a level 3 force field. All you're going to do is hurt yourself, eventually frustrate yourself, and maybe die of exhaustion or pass out. You ain't getting through it. What if I told you, right, we're going to talk a lot about the movie The Matrix today, but what if I told you, Neo, that the force field around a person with cognitive dissonance and willful ignorance to things is stronger than that window for you than the window is for the fly? It is. And we're going to talk about that today. We're going to talk about, somebody here said they've woken up one person in 20 years. Maybe you did. It is like a lottery ticket. Every once in a while, somebody is woken. But I don't believe so. I don't really think it's usually even when you think you did. I think, well, we'll go ahead and we'll save it for the main topic today. Let's go ahead and take care of our sponsors of the day first. Sponsor of the day number one today is John Pugliano with the Wealthsteading Podcast. You know, John has been helping this community out since I first met him back in 2010. That's 14 flipping years, guys. He is an amazing dude. He is a homesteader himself. He is a prepper. He's a ham radio operator, but he's also an investment manager and a damn good one. And he shares his knowledge and experience on the Wealth Studying podcast. Comes out on average about once a week, maybe once every other week. His latest episode is Manufacturing Recession 2 years and Counting. Yeah, we're in a recession, whether they tell you that or not. And 2 years and counting is maybe being a little bit generous, but you want to check out John's podcast. Again, you find it at wealthsteading.com, where you can learn to grow your wealth the way you grow a garden. Next up today is Canine Academy. That's Joel Ryle's operation. Joel is an amazing dog trainer, and it led him to create canineacademy.us, where you can learn to train your dog by training yourself first. Training dogs is actually really easy. Now, individual dogs have individual unique challenges. Belle, who I got from Joel, has some unique challenges that I've never had to deal with before. But core canine obedience is core canine obedience. And once you get the core canine obedience down, then you can get that dog to do whatever you want. You can make a dog into a sporting hunting dog, a protection dog, just a great homestead dog, or just a, you know, an enjoyable member of the family in your home. But that all starts with training yourself. You should take one of Joel's courses. Again, the core canine obedience course, that's something that anybody that owns dogs and will own dogs in their life should take that course. There's also a problem-solving library. It's like a free course where you can see how Joel teaches and a lot of other options there. So check that out. And then this is not the item of the day for today. It's the item of the day for yesterday. But I'm going to mention it because I did a rewind yesterday, and a lot of people don't listen to rewinds because it's still on sale. At least one of the two options are. If you've wanted an Excalibur dehydrator, and most preppers either have one or want one, or they have one and they want two, they have their 2900 series on sale for $169. This usually sells in like the mid 200s, and they do not like Excalibur's a lot like DeWalt or Yoder's or Provided Pantry. Like a lot of these companies in the prepper space, they have really tight controls on their retailers and on sale prices, and they don't discount things very frequently. And Excalibur is definitely one of them. The last time I featured this item on sale was 2020. Yes, 20. So 4 years ago. As weird as that is to say, 2020 is 4 years ago. Are you kidding me? But it was 2020 the last time I featured this item on sale. I don't know how long it'll last, and I'm usually right about this when I say this about a product. The 2900 series is kind of their entry level, and it's all any prepper ever needs. It's also been around forever, and they have come up with more upgradable models. I guess you would say more upgraded models. I think this is probably about to go the way of the Dodo and be discontinued, and that's why they're fire selling them at this price. And with that in mind, if you want one, I would get one because like I said yesterday, if you are going to start a beef jerky business in your house and run these things 24/7, 365, I would probably buy one of the more upgraded ones. But if this is something you're going to use, you know, once a month, 12 times a year, this thing will probably outlast you. And you get a 5-year warranty anyway. Colorado Foothills says they're the best dehydrators. They're the only dehydrators, in my view, on a consumer level. Like if you go out and you buy one of these little $60, $70 dehydrators, it's going to blow up and burn out. You're going to end up buying another one. By the time you buy two or three of those, you could have bought one of these and been done. It is very seldom I'm like, if you don't buy this one, you're wrong. I don't do that with guns. If you don't buy a Glock 19, you're wrong. I don't do that shit, right? But when it comes to dehydrators, it's almost that bad. All right, so let's talk about this. And Marty says, hell, I can't wake up my wife to the food system. Yeah, the closer people are to you, unless they're ready to wake up, the more frustrating and the thicker the glass. Like you go, like you're trying to wake up your buddy or your brother or your brother-in-law or your coworker. You know, you're the fly trying to get through the window. You try to wake up your spouse and they don't want to wake up. It's transparent aluminum, right? From Star Trek, right? Is what you're trying to pound through there. It's not going to happen. And we'll talk about some ways to actually reverse that by not pushing so hard. The best way to get new ideas into a person's mind is to get them to ask you. Then they give you permission. We'll hit on that today too. But I want you to think about something. The world we live in today is a world of memes, and it is a wonderful world indeed. We have these memes about everything. And one of the most often used memes out there is something from The Matrix with Morpheus with the red pill and the blue pill saying choose. And because of that, I think especially a lot of people that didn't like watch The Matrix movies when they were new, when they came out, and in the time period they released it, and I think it loses something because art is made for the time that it's made in. And we don't want to be unburdened by what has been, but sometimes we need to be. But in the movie, when you listen to the way people talk about it, you get the view that Morpheus woke up Neo. Morpheus is the one that created the awakening. And it's not the case at all. So what happens is we follow and model archetypes, right? And so we're following that archetype, even if we don't think we're doing it directly in that I am Morpheus, I have Messiah complex, I will wake up the masses or something, right? You notice Morpheus didn't try to wake up the masses. They didn't go unplug everybody. And what was going on in the movie, for those that remember, there's a lot of breadcrumbs in this movie. I need to go rewatch the first three. The fourth one's stupid. Because I've, over the years, just found more and more breadcrumbs. I don't know if they're intentionally there or not. But what's going on with Neo before he even sees or hears from Morpheus? Isn't he already waking up? He's having these visions of his mouth being closed up and these agents coming after him. And he knows, like, he's hacking stuff and trying to figure stuff out. But he knows something's not right. And so we think we're going to awaken people, but all we can really do is when the person is waking up, we can help them wake up, but we can't wake them up. Think about a person that goes in for surgery and the doctor puts them on like heavy anesthetic and yeah, Tom's got it. It was Neo looking for Morpheus. So the only way you can effectively be somebody's Morpheus is if they're looking for a Morpheus. That to be seeking it, he was looking, says Green Country Agriparks. That's exactly the point I'm making. So in that movie, again, when Neo realizes something's not right, something's wrong, and he looks for help, does Morpheus say, let me tell you the way things are, or does he say, I will show you if you choose to take the next step? And so I'm not saying any of us should live our life based on any movie, especially that one, but there is a lot of symbology in it. And I think we can take that from it, that if we want to help people wake up, then what we need to do is lead and show, but only work with those who want to be worked with. Only work with people who want help. And even the pill was a choice, wasn't it? Did Morpheus say, now that you've woken up, you must eat the red pill, or your life is over, or you'll die, or the Illuminati will come get you, so you can have the red pill, see how deep the rabbit hole goes, or you can have the blue pill, and you can go back to sleep. That's the approach that we need to be taking with people. If you're not ready for the truth yet, you let me know when you want it. You'll get a lot more people to willingly take the red pill if you stop trying to shove it down their throat. We're humans. We're not dogs and cats where you take the dog and you pry his mouth open and stick the pill in his mouth and rub his throat, blow in his nose, and he swallows it. And it wouldn't work that way anyway. Do you think there was actually a pill? Was the pill real? Was there a physical pill that Neo consumed in the Matrix? No. It was the Matrix. It was an illusion. Plugged into a machine. He was asleep. So again, that's where I was going. I got derailed by a comment there. If you have a doctor and they put you under heavy anesthetic and you're no longer being administered the anesthetic, but it hasn't come out of your system yet and you're still passed out, if that person's laying in the bed, they're not dead. They're going to be fine. The anesthetic will wear off. But how hard can you shake them and not wake them up? Really, really hard. Right, you can probably keep operating on them. Unfortunately, that it will begin to wear off at some point. It's going to be a very bad situation. But when they take you off anesthesia, you don't just wake up. you stay completely knocked out. Many people in this audience probably have never been under full-on general anesthesia before. I had when I was a kid. I had surgery. And when you wake up, like, man, you went out and you woke up. That's how it feels. And when you wake up, you're like, I'm awake. And you think you can, you can't do shit. You try to sit up and your head just rattles. You don't know where you are. You're completely disoriented. That's the place we can help people. Because they've chosen to open their eyes and they've chosen to try to sit up. And they might be very disoriented when we get there, you know. Aaron, that's we're going to absolutely hit that today. Ask them questions. When you tell somebody something and you say, this is the way things are, then you are giving them an ultimatum. And I don't think most people realize that. Like, it's this way. Well, if they have any other belief other than what you just gave them, they're going to close down. But if you ask them a question, it allows them to explore their own version of the answer. And let's be honest, almost everybody that would consider themselves awake to this kind of stuff, your first understandings of what you were looking at have probably changed. You were probably wrong. You were sorting it out, and you needed that time. And people that come to this place in their life, they need that time too. Do not expect them to go right to where you are. Like, how long ago did you have this experience? You know, for me, it's way precedes the show. It's about 25 years. But the guy that I was at 25 and the guy, or, you know, 27 and the guy I'm at 52, very different people. Very different people. My understanding of this stuff has evolved so much. And the other thing we need to think about in the movie is a nice analogy to consider is that they didn't wake up. Not only did they not wake up everybody, and not only did they only wake up people who were beginning to wake up themselves, in general, they only woke up young minds. Young minds. In fact, Morpheus says something that we've never awakened a mind as old as Neo's before. They did it because something was special about Neo. He was the one, right? So usually we only awaken people at a much younger age. Now, the analogy there is not so much don't talk to people over 40, right? Or don't trust anyone over 30 or some bullshit like that. It's simply that the longer a person has lived under the illusion that everything is super and this is the way things are supposed to be and we can trust government and we can trust the schools and we can trust everybody, we can trust the media, and so like half the people we can't trust but the other half we get to, the longer they've lived that way, the harder it is for them to wake up, the harder it is for them to come out from under the anesthesia. More, the longer that a person has lived this way and been successful, it's even really hard now because all this wonderful stuff that I have came from this belief. At least they believe that, right? Came in spite of the belief. It came in spite of the belief. So this is a metaphor about life. And this is what I take from my, you know, recollection of the Matrix movies. Number one, the most accurate, articulate, and fact-filled argument will fail to reach the person who does not want to be reached. And for a person like me, it's even worse, right? Because my wife's like, are you losing your mind? Because I'll be rehearsing for the show. I'll come up with something I want to talk about on the show, and I'll be monologuing to myself. And I'm like, no, I'm rehearsing for the show. She's like, are you sure? I'm like, well, here's what I'm talking about. Oh, okay, you're fine. You don't need to go see the doctor or anything, right? Like, so for me, like my whole life, my whole career for the last decade and a half has been built on let's formulate a logical, well thought out argument for what's being presented and do it in the most, you know, articulate and convincing way possible. And so you begin to believe if I can just figure out the right words to say, you might as well study like an ancient spell book of Wiccan spells and think if you, you know, make a certain circle and burn a certain spice and chant certain words in Latin or some shit, that magic will come down and make this person wake up. It won't happen. The person has to be open to your explanation before the explanation can do anything for them. They won't listen if what happens all the time is humans end up thinking the other party's listening, but what the other person's really doing is like they're just waiting for their moment to get their side in. they actually aren't interested in hearing what you have to say. They're you're both interested in convincing the other party that you're right. And the person that's awake is not immune to falling into that trap. Now, what they are immune to is being convinced back the other direction, like, bro, I've been where you are. I know what you're saying. And it makes us actually, sometimes people that have been awake to reality a long time are the worst people to explain it to people just waking up. Because you're trying to teach advanced calculus to somebody that's struggling with like 2 times 7. And I don't say that to be insulting. It's just the stage you are in this particular walk of life. And sometimes a person who is kind of new to it themselves and beginning to explore is a better person to have those first conversations, because articulate fact-filled arguments will fail. It doesn't seem to make any sense. But have you not ever explained something to somebody in a way that was absolutely 100% fact? You actually, even when you look back now, you go, no, I wasn't wrong. I got nothing in that wrong. And you were calm and you were peaceful and you weren't yelling at them and calling them stupid, idiotic, retard or something like that. You were like, let me explain. Like, this is how the Federal Reserve creates money. And they just said, nope, it can't be. That's not right. That's cognitive dissonance on their part. They're not going to listen. They're not going to listen because, believe it or not, at that moment, it is in their best interest not to listen to you. Not long term, but in that moment. So if I took you to a doctor because you had an injury and your number one goal, but you wasn't hurting at the moment, but your number one goal was to avoid pain, and they're like, hey, that arm's broken. We're going to have to set that. It's going to hurt like a son of a bitch. It's going to need some pins in it and some surgery, right? And they're going to need a sling on it, and you're going to have to wear that for like several months, and then there's going to be some rehab. And overall, it's going to take about 6 months before you really get the full use of your arm back. In that moment, it is in that person's best interest, if their goal is to avoid pain, to not do that shit. Now, of course, long term, if they want their arm not to like get infected, turn gangrenous, and like have to be amputated, they should probably treat the injury. But that's not the situation they're in. Most people are going to live their entire life oblivious to all this shit. And they have every right to do it if that's what they want to do. What I'm really saying is most people would choose to be a lion in a zoo if they were going to be a lion over a lion on the Serengeti in the wilderness. If you really explained to them, if they really understood, look, here's how this works. You're a lion now, and you have complete freedom, but you have to feed yourself. You have to fight for your place in the pride. Other males are going to beat the shit out of you when you try. You're either going to have to make a spot of like 1, 2, or 3 or find a new pride to try to fight your way into. And when you get old and shit, your sons are going to kill you and take over the pride. In the interim, you've got it pretty good, but in the end, you have to help the women hunt. You have to be the defender of the pride. The hyenas are going to try to kill your family. You have to go kill them. While you're hunting, just simply like running down a gazelle or something, sometimes lions take a kick to the face, break a jaw, and die from an animal they can easily kill. It's a dangerous life, but it will be 100% freedom. Or we're going to put you in this box. In this box, you'll be fed. You'll have free medical treatment. People will come stare at you. Basically, you lay around, fart shit, and have baby lions. And you have no freedom at all. No freedom. You're going to have to eat food that we choose for you and feed to you. You're never going to hunt. You're going to lay on your ass, but you'll probably live 10 years longer than you would in the wild. You'll never be hungry. And if anything goes wrong, we'll do everything we can to fix it for you. I'm telling you right now, the vast majority of people would choose the zoo because they do. That's how we know, because they do. Just look around you and see how many people choose safety and security above freedom and liberty, because liberty and freedom have dangers that go with them. Most people also are not woken up by others. They're woken up by their life experiences, and I believe to some level their mental predisposition. I think there are people that have a mental predisposition that literally will never wake up. The only way they would wake up is for us to have an event that we would call a critical mass event. And I don't know if we're going to get there anytime in my lifetime. It'd be great if we did, but I'm not going to let wishful thinking steer my prediction on that. A critical mass is actually one of the insights in the nine insights in a book called The Celestine Prophecy by James Redfield, which is a book of spiritual awakening based on a fable. And it works like this. If there are enough people at any given time awakened to a concept, the concept takes on that critical mass and begins to cascade, and it takes others who would never have believed it will now believe it. And it's like a boulder rolling down a mountainside and becoming a giant snowball and getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger to the point where it becomes unstoppable. And I think there are people that have such a go-along and get-along persona, and whether that's nurture or nature, I don't know. I think it can be both. That until you hit that critical mass, nothing will wake them up. The only thing that would wake them up is when 51% of people were awake. And then they, when the TV told them what you're telling them, then they would believe it, and not until then. And their particular channels, their particular bands of the headband, Harrison Bergeron, that they tune into, only when that happened would they believe it, and then it would still be hard. And once people do wake up, we should help them. But again, I think we should leave sleeping dogs should lie. Because I want you to think about something right now. Try to go back to whatever it was that first woke you up. And I bet you if we were like in a live presentation where I was in front of a room where people could just shout out instead of just feedback via live feed text, I'd get a ton of different answers if I simply said, what was the thing that woke you up? There'd be a shitload of people that would somewhere in it, because I know just by interviewing people for 16 years, would say, well, Ron Paul, right? But I bet you, if I said, okay, well, yeah, okay, Ron Paul, yeah, great. Genesis story for so many people in this community. I love that common theme. But what led you to Ron Paul? There'll be something else. There'll be a thing, not a person. And the thing will lead to a person, and the person will pull a thread, and the thread will begin to unravel a tapestry, and that will lead to another question that leads you to pull on a thread and find another person or group of people and continue to go down and work this all out for yourself. And when you really drill down to it, it'd be like, I found out how big the national debt was and that it never goes down and that we're never going to repay it, and it scared the shit out of me, so I looked into, well, how does that work? And when I found out, I was like, holy crap. Or I watched a presentation sometime, I don't even know who gave it, but it was about agriculture, and it said we only had 40 harvests left. And I thought, that can't be right, but they were in that state, that was their red pill that led to the next layer. And they went and decided, I'm going to find out how bad is the situation in agriculture, or that the food doesn't have the nutrients it used to. Or I was always struggling to lose weight, and I ran across this big-haired, red-headed Scotch-Irish doctor guy that said to eat meat and fat, and I figured, screw it, I already weigh 350 pounds. I can't make it any worse, no matter what anybody says. I'm going to try it, and it worked. And then I said, wait a minute, if they lied about that, if it turns out that the food pyramid, or the plate now, is the macronutrient equivalent to a bag of cattle food, and humans are not supposed to be cattle, does that mean they're treating us like cattle? It's something like everybody has a different version of that story. For me, it was honestly finding libertarianism. And not the type of libertarianism I talk about now. Like I said, we all have a journey. I was a big LP party member of the Libertarian Party. And as I get to that, I want to kind of tell you what happens to people when they wake up. Many of you have. Or you wouldn't be here. You'd already left today. You know, you wouldn't want anything to do with this if you weren't awake. But we tend to forget where we were when we woke up, what we were doing, and how we initially responded to it. Because I'm going to say this, and if you're newly awake and you come talk to me at an event, like I'm going to be at Silver Lions Festival next weekend, don't not talk to me when I say what I'm about to say. Please come talk to me. But the newly awakened are the most annoying fucking people on the planet. God knows I was. I was in my 20s. And I have a high IQ. I'm an articulate person. And I have a wicked, crazy memory. Like, I've always had that going for us. Like, I can read a book, give me a test on it, I'm going to pass it, right? If it was interesting, I'm going to get an A. And so I got into that mode, if I can just learn all the issues and the libertarian perspective, I'll wake up the masses. You know, we call that friends and neighbors. We call it a messiah complex, right? So when I first discovered capital L libertarianism and they were asking me to run for office and I understood that, wait a minute, like my issues with both parties are solved now. I have a solution. Oh, my God. I was worse than Jake Robinson asking questions in the middle of a presentation. You know, well, Jack, I was wondering if you wanted to go fishing next weekend. While you're asking that, let me tell you about our Lord and Savior, the porcupine, right? Like, I mean, literally, that's where I was at with it. That I realized something really quick, fortunately for myself, so I didn't die like a fly in the window. I was wrong. I wasn't, and this is what I had to realize. Jack, it's not you that's explaining it wrong. They really do understand what you're saying. They don't want it. And this was foreign to me. Wait a minute. You mean that the average person doesn't actually want the government to spend less money? Nope. They absolutely want the government to spend more money. No, that can't be true. Well, let me prove it to you. How do they show you how much they're supporting you? What do politicians do when they want to prove that they support the troops? They talk about how much money they spent on defense. When they want to prove to you that they care about education, what do they talk about? How much money they spent on education. If politicians get elected by bragging about how much money they spent that was stolen from the people who vote from them, do those people actually want the government to spend less money? No, they want them to spend less money on the things they don't want and more money on the things that they do want. That leads right back to the two-party system. And then I started working through all of it, and I quit doing it. But I would say for about a year, I was an insufferable – fortunately, I didn't have a podcast yet because it would have never made it. I was an insufferable one-note pain in the ass. And I think most people, to a degree, are. They find their thing. But then they have to get past that and realize how much broader. They have to start doing pattern recognition, you know. So the next thing that happens when you realize that, wait a minute, it's not that I'm explaining it wrong. And you begin to find other people who actually are awake to what's going on, at least the piece that you're like, you find the commonalities and you have these discussions. And then you start to learn more and you start to read books and you start to do research. And today we have the internet. You can research everything, you know, and you find the crazy and the middle and the too far in the other direction and eventually begin to form a much better, more holistic view of everything. And you look at the people around you and you go, man, this is so much worse than I thought it was. It's depression. It's depression. Like, we're never going to get out of this. These people don't care. They don't understand. It's the idiocracy. Somebody said it here, right? T-Sys, idiocracy. You realize you're sitting in the middle of the movie, Idiocracy. I mean, you know, the Secretary of Defense is looking down the barrel of a shotgun with a giant medal on his chest. I mean, I can't make it up. Like, it is that bad. And then you think, I know there has to be an answer. There has to be a thing, if we did it, that would maybe not fix everything, but really fix most things. If we get the right people elected from the Libertarian Party or the, you know, Progressive This Party or, you know, Green or whatever other column you pick from, or the Libertarians inside the two main party or whatever it is, that's it. Like, I want an answer because I can't accept that it's as dark as I've seen it. What happens after that? Then they tend to panic. They find no easy answer. They begin to realize that's not going to happen. And they end up on AM radio listening to, I'm telling you right now, they're going to put us on the blue line and the red line and they're going to kill us all. Right? Alex Jones or something like that. Some extreme version of the truth, which is often not the truth. It is everything counter to the mainstream, including look left, right, and left before you cross the street, Oh, we can't do that because they said to do that, so it's a plot. I know it, right? So they go to this extreme panic voice. And then one of two things is the last step. They either recycle or wash out back to the beginning. You know, in the movie, remember the one guy, was his name Cypher, I think, right? He makes the deal with the agents to put him back in the Matrix. He's eating the steak and he says, I know this is real, but I don't give a fuck. It tastes great. You know, and he says, I can go back in. They can put me back in and I don't want to remember anything, but I want to be rich and happy. Right. And they say, no problem. And the whole shtick in the movie is you can't go back. Well, the movie has limits. It's just a metaphor and you can go back. People go back to sleep and give up on the truth all the time. And they often then just go in this complete repetitive recycling pattern. Or they mature into reality. They accept we're never going to fix everything. That's not my job. They stop trying to win, and they go to a philosophy of trying to not lose. We'll talk about that more in a minute. Because there are certain things that you have to come to accept, or you will default to plugging yourself back in. You'll just give up. It's somebody said here in the live stream before we actually started in the chat, I have prepper fatigue. And I said, I understand, man. I have fatigue, right? Right now, guys, I'll tell you the truth. I'm tired. Probably the only thing that saved me this year was going to Flashback Fridays and taking three-day weekends. Because I don't know if you guys even paid attention. I haven't done a single vacation this year. Usually somewhere in the summer, I disappear for like a week and a half, 2 weeks. And I have that reboot. And then usually I have something in the spring like an event. Well, this year I had the spring event. And my dog freaking crashed right in the middle of it. And that made it incredibly stressful. And there was no pressure valve release at all down in Bastrop at John Bush's thing. It just didn't happen for me this year. And then we just decided not to take a vacation this year. And I am so looking forward to next week spending like a day in my car on the way up and a day in my car on my way back alone and in total silence. I won't have my buddy riding shotgun with me this year. I'll miss not having him with me, but I'll also enjoy just the road time. And then going out there and talking to people and just letting go of any responsibility to the show for a long weekend. And then I'm coming back and I'm probably going to take a day or two off with my wife that next week and go do like a little short mini trip since we're not taking a vacation this year. By the way, the reason we're doing that, we're saving up for like a huge badass vacation next year. We're going to go on Alaska cruise. And we're doing it like all out, like it's going to cost us twice what a vacation usually does. So we decided if we wanted that, that was the exchange to make. But I'm fatigued. I'm worn out. And this is what happens to people is they wear out. And when they wear out on the reality, they just say, screw it. They put on a football game or a baseball game or whatever, and they let go. Because let me ask you a question. If you can think back to before you knew any of what you know now about the food industry, the banking industry and finance, the media's bias, all of it. If you can think back to whenever that was for you, some of you it was not that long ago, because a lot of people, man, the 2 to 3 years of craziness under the scamdemic of COVIDs, that was what woke them up. A lot of you guys, you've been awake 15, 20 years. If you can really think back to a time when you really believed in us and them, and the us was just the rich guys, like your boss at work, he was the asshole, and you were just underpaid no matter how much you did or didn't do, right? When it was a very simple thing, someday I'll get a raise and everything will be better. Someday the right guy will get elected and everything will be better. Someday my team will win the Super Bowl, whatever. Like remember who you were at that point. In some ways, weren't you happier? I mean, ignorance is really bliss, right? So if you don't come to accept some of the things around you, you will eventually just kind of soft plug back in, right? You'll just kind of default to going back to being a node in the network that is the Matrix, right? So one of the things you have to accept is most people want to be led, controlled, and protected. Odds are if you woke up, that's not you. That's not you. And it's very hard to accept that what you are isn't typical. I mean, we even do it because we call them what, right? We call them normies. then we seem to forget that we came up with that name for them, right? Normies or what have you. But most people want someone in charge. They don't want to be independent. So it's very hard for you to accept that, like, why won't these people wake up? Well, they don't want to. They're asleep, willfully and by choice. And there's no way to fix it. You have to accept that, too. Like, you're not going to fix it. And even if you had the miraculous lottery ticket, if you talk to somebody completely asleep, you hit them at just the right freaking microsecond where their brain is susceptible to it, you plant a seed, it sprouts into a mighty beanstalk out of their head. They come to you and they take it in like you're Yoda and they're Luke, man. Whatever you say, Master, I will absorb. Do you think it matters? Do you think it changes the macro? It doesn't. And it's not going to. It's not going to. You have to accept that too. I know that's not really encouraging, but it doesn't matter what you do for anybody but you. And it's up to everybody else to come into that awakening on their own. And there is a fundamental reality. You're going to have to work with people who are still plugged in. You have to rely on them for things. You're going to work in an office. They're going to sit on both sides of you. And you're going to have to go to one of them and get the TPS report signed off on or whatever. There's no way around it. And you know what you do with those people? Leave them alone. Interact with them where you have to. That interactive edge that we talk about in permaculture. I need the TPS report signed off. And Rhonda's the one that does that. So here, sign off on the TPS reports. And she's like, are you going to go vote? Sure. And walk away. Don't bother. There's nothing there for you. There's nothing there for you. It's so tempting. She seems like a very intelligent lady, but if she were what you thought she was, you would have had actual conversations by now about something other than the surface level bullshit. Walk away. John says meet people where they are, and I agree, but when they're nowhere near you, you can't really meet them. You know, that meet people where they are, what that makes me think of, and I don't know if it's where John got it, but Gabe Brown and Ray Archuleta and the organization they put to bring farmers over into true regenerative agriculture, they say meet the farmer where they are. But there's something that you have to do for those two guys and their people to put any effort into you. You have to take one step. You have to take one step. You don't have to throw away all the heavy tillage equipment. You don't have to get rid of every bit of herbicide and pesticide in one day. We have to take one step. You have to ask for help. You have to say, hey, I want to at least start doing winter cover crops. I want to plant cereal rye. Can you help me? You have to do something. Then I can meet you where you are. You have to get off zero on your own, and then I can meet you where you are. And until they get off zero, not going to happen. Oh, man. Boy, these people are on it today in the thing, man. They've got everything. Betty says, when I watch street preachers, you realize that a great chasm exists. Baby steps. Yeah, I don't think anybody has ever been brought to Jesus by a guy standing out in the street yelling at people that the judgment day is coming and you're about to go to hell. You believe whatever you want in your faith and your religion and proselytize however you want, including that way if you want to, but I'm telling you it doesn't work. Nobody's like walking down the street going, you know, tonight I'm going to go out to my buddy's house and shoot some dope up again, bang some hoes, and wake up in my own vomit, you know, and then I don't know what I'm going to do next because it's going to be a rad weekend, bro. And then they walk by and hear somebody, he is coming in the sky. Oh, I'm turning my life over right now. Hey, Bill, I'm not coming tonight. You got the hoes and the dope to yourself. Like, that's not how that works. That's not how that works. And it's never going to be that way. So don't think that, you know that what I'm saying is true, but then you think, but I could tell my friend, like, how do I talk to my friend about drugs, you know, as far as the pharmaceutical drugs, not, you know, a drug intervention type thing. You don't. Not until they're willing to take that one step. They have to take the step. And wherever they step, that's where you have to talk to them. If your thing really is big pharma and food, but they take the step on finance, don't try to move them over to your place. No, no. That's where meet them where they are comes into this discussion. You meet, really? Well, tell me what you know about the Federal Reserve. Shut up. Listen. listen, you might learn something. Because if that's not your thing and it is their thing, they might be excited in Messiah complex mode. And what do they need to do to process that? This is why you get Messiah complex. It's not really to convert people. You need to dump. You need to tell somebody what you know and feel that somebody heard you. And just let them. But if you don't accept that you're going to have to work with people who are plugged in and leave them alone, you're going to be a miserable person. There are solutions to everything, but they are individual and community. They're individual solutions, and that's the main ones to focus on because you don't need somebody else to enact an individual solution. And then I would consider, when I say individual and community, family-level solutions are also individual in that they are an individual family. So someone asked about, you know, reaching their spouse or something earlier. Like I said, you're not going to do that until they're ready. But you can start taking actions. And as you begin to change for the positive, your spouse might find that very appealing and might start having more open conversations if you don't push, right? But one way or another, you have these solutions that are like individual or community. So when people get together and they form barter networks or they form freedom groups or freedom cells or whatever, that would be a community level. Or when farmers get together and they realize that, like, we're growing all this grain and beans and shit, and there's a commodity set price on that. And we don't have any control over the price of that market at all. And we all harvest our shit at the same time. But that's, we all have huge pieces of land and big mortgages and big payments on equipment, and then we have to do that. But wait a minute. Our kids want a place on the farm, and now you need 5,000, 10,000 acres for one man to make a living, if even that will get it done. I can't break a piece of the farm off and give it to my kids like my dad did for me. So they either need to be sent away to the city, which is how we got in this mess in the first place, or I need to figure out something else. And you figure out, wait a minute, restaurants and shit in Chicago will pay a whole lot of money for, like, vegetables and stuff. I could give my kid an acre. It won't really affect my life at all. It's good farmland or I wouldn't be here. And I can let them farm mixed vegetables. And then, well, we got to get the product to market, and that 1 acre garden will never produce enough to really develop this system. So this is right out of Ray Occhialetta's network, but it's a different gentleman that did this. You get an older farmer who doesn't really work the farm anymore, and he gets a great big truck or van and trailer, and once a week he drives to Chicago and delivers to all these restaurants, and now you have this conglomerate of mini farms built on large farms and mostly kids, and all of a sudden these kids, 16, 18, 20 years old, they're making as much money or more off an acre than their old man who's been doing this their whole life is making off of 1,000 acres. That is a regional community solution. There is no government that will do that. There's no government program that will make that happen. Because when people, you know what people want in government programs? Guarantees. And it doesn't work. That's why they put like $8 billion into electric charging stations, and they've delivered three. They delivered three. If you actually wanted more electrical charging stations, you would tell anybody that has a gas station, you can put in an electrical charging station, you get this much money to do it, go put it in, and we'll pay the bill after you put it in. And we would have thousands and thousands and thousands of them installed already. Instead, they're putting them in like an Albertsons parking lot in Azle, Texas. There's four parking spots in Azle, Texas, that to use that parking spot, you're supposed to be using the electrical charge station. I now consider it Jack's personal parking spot. My freaking Challenger, I pull right up in there, and you know what happens? Absolutely nothing. You know why? No one uses them. There's four of them. If there's one car parked in any one of them, I won't use it. I use it every time. No one's going to use them. Someday they will, maybe. But right now, I believe they're using more power for the big screen that's supposed to entertain you and tell you it's there than power they actually put into vehicles. I have literally never seen a vehicle plugged into one. It's, you know, but that's what they do. And government, you'll need to understand this about government. I think most of you probably do. It's always trying to get more power. You'll never change that. Ever. trying to get government to intentionally make itself smaller and less powerful is like expecting a life form on its own to choose to stop reproducing its species and willingly head into extinction. How likely is that? Now, life forms will head into extinction, but because of problems, not by will and choice. Government is a living organism. The state is an entity unto itself. It is, you know, here's how to look at it. So scientists say like one of the largest life forms in the world is this fungal ring in the northwestern United States. But other than that, there's one that they argue that might even be bigger. And it is a stand of aspen trees in Colorado somewhere. Massive stand of aspen trees, acres and acres and acres and acres of aspen trees. All the roots are meshed. And then there's a massive fungal network in there. But unlike the fungi in the northwest United States, it's actually killing the trees. This is mycorrhizal fungi. This is beneficial fungi. And it has networked all these trees. And those trees are now an individual organism. They can put radioactive isotope on the roots of one of the trees on one end of the system, and they can detect it instantaneously faster than the speed of light would indicate travel elsewhere, because the organism acts as one. We don't even really fully understand it. And that is one organism made of many organisms. Each individual tree can grow and have a life and die. But it is both one life and part of a larger life at the same time. And I'm not trying to get metaphysical. I mean, legitimately, this is how forest biologists explain these types of arrangements. That's what government is. Government itself is not alive. Like, what do you call that organism that is all those aspen trees networked together with their root systems and mycorrhizal? Do you call it a mega aspen thing? What do you call it? I don't know. But if we gave it a name, it itself isn't alive, but it is alive. It functions as a living thing apart from the individual components. So the government is made up of bureaucrats, elected officials, enforcers, etc. And it acts as one giant life force entity. And its goal is to get bigger and more powerful, because that's the only way it survives. Because this is the truth in nature. If an organism is not growing, it's declining. And decline always results in death. Decline always results in death. You grow to a certain point in your life, assuming you're hit by a truck, get some weird cancer or something like that. You live a long saculum, a long standard human life. You live to be 98 years old. There's a point in that growth, no matter how well you take care of yourself, no matter what you do, you go over the hill, as we say. And everything's downhill from there. And there's no back up. Like, you could, like, if you're really out of shape and you start working out, you've seen people who are like 70 years old and all of a sudden they're really built and all. They're still, all they did was kind of go back to where they should have been in the first place. Like, when you're in declination, you're heading for death. And no organism wants to die. Well, an organism made of many organisms, where the individual organisms can die and new organisms replace them, doesn't have to die. It can be essentially immortal. Or for the sake of a human lifetime, it can be immortal. And it will always get bigger. I don't have a solution. If you're waiting, well, what's the soup? What is the solution to that? It is to get out of the way of the giant organism and not think you can reverse it. Okay? There's no winning. There's no winning. There's simply not losing. I used to work with a gentleman named Valdir Azanov. He was a former member of the KGB. He was Ukrainian-Russian. Ukrainian Soviet. So he was born in Ukraine during the USSR, before the breakup. He was a member of the Russian Judo Olympic team as well when he was in his teens. And we were having a conversation one time about how dominant the Soviets were in the Olympics, because many of you are too young to remember that period of time. But in the Olympics that the Soviets participated in anyway, they were the most dominant force in the world. They were incredible. Their medal count was insane. And he told me the reason that they had such a propensity for victory was they never tried to win. And I'm like, what the hell are you talking about? We don't try to win, especially in a combat sport like the judo. You don't try to win. So when you're trying to win, what you're doing is you're using aggression and you're constantly trying to take out your enemy. Right? And understand, I don't care how good you are, when you're competing at that level, so is your opponent. Your opponent's also very good or they wouldn't be there. And, you know, you could be the Jamaican bobsled team. Yeah, okay, right. But in general, when you are an Olympic athlete staring at another Olympic athlete in like a boxing sport or even a physically demanding sport like hockey, that other party is good at what they do and they are going to resist you and they're going to fight you and they're going to be good at it. And if you go at them with the intent to win, then and they do the same thing, then you both have about an equal propensity to make a mistake. And in general, whoever makes the first mistake loses. They lose the point or they lose the match or whatever it is, right? And so it's all about basically trying to defeat your opponent and capitalize on their mistakes. Well, their philosophy was don't lose. Not try to win. Don't lose. That if you focus on not losing, rather than trying to dominate and win, you give yourself an advantage because their aggression now becomes something you truly can use against them because you're countering, and you're patient compared to them. They get frustrated. They go stronger with aggression. Sooner or later, that aggression leads to a mistake, and bam. And that was their primary reason that they were so dominant. I'm sure the steroids helped too, right? But he said, no, when I asked about that. Yeah, bullshit, right? Sorry, Val, I don't buy it, right? But yeah, that was the philosophy, and that is how we have to think. Don't lose. So what's losing? Losing is being arrogant and believing you can do anything you want and ending up in prison for the rest of your life. That's losing. Losing is being eaten up, spit out, and chewed out by the system. Losing is being so afraid to act when you should act that you become paralyzed and fail to act, and now you're looking at a 9% interest rate because you didn't want to buy a house 5 years ago when you could afford one. Okay, and if that hurts and cuts a little deep for some of you, I'm sorry. It's true. And there's so many people that because they're so focused on winning, they actually don't do anything at all. Instead of figuring out, well, what do I really want? And understand, winning is not convincing your brother-in-law that you're right. That's not winning, right? Teaching somebody something against their will, even successfully, is not winning. Not for you, anyway. That's not winning. Winning is you living your life on your terms, your way, to the best possible outcome given your situation. Get going now on that. So many people are worried about waking up my cousin, waking up my neighbor, waking up America. Wake. What do you want in your life? Do you want everybody awake? Probably that's not really, if you made a wish list, what you really want, but it's a nice distraction. It's fun to tell people that they need smoke alarms while your house burns down, but it doesn't keep your house from burning down. And there's so many people in our space like that. They spend all day long listening to podcasts or Alex Jones or some shit like that. It's to my best interest that you do because I like when you listen to me. But no, what you need to do is figure out where you are and where you want to be and then plot a course. If you were doing that, you wouldn't be worried about Bill not believing you because Bill cannot believe you while you have your off-grid cabin or whatever it is for you. And all of a sudden, what Bill wants will matter a lot less to you. You'll find yourself caring a lot less about what Bill wants. There's no winning here, just not losing. And then the last part, and this is so important, and this is something people struggle with, and I've always wondered why they struggle with this. What you think will not change what will happen. What you pay attention to will not change what will happen at the macro level. There are people that when you tell them, like, don't watch the news, they freak out. like they're going to die if they don't watch the news. And a lot of people have convinced themselves, well, I don't watch the news. But all they do all day long is look at TikTok or Instagram, and all the people they follow are basically just different versions of the same news over and over and over again, all day long, locked in on it, right? So it's not just what they believe that what they think has an impact on the world, but literally what they focus and pay attention to, that if they took their eyes off it and their mind off it, the whole world will just spin out of control. It's like a weird form of narcissism that most of the people that have it aren't actually narcissists. It's some sort of like internal little piece of narcissism that my focus and attention on this craziness is necessary for the world to stay together or something. Look, you could die tomorrow, nothing's going to change. I mean, the people that love you, it'll change for them. And even that only for a while. No matter how much you love somebody, most people cope with death relatively well in a relatively short period of time. And they go, because that's what we have to do. Once the dead are gone, there's no bringing them back. So if we're not going to go too, then we have to move on. And that's true while you're alive too. You completely changing where you focus your attention and energy will not have an effect on the rest of the world. And if something really bad is coming, somebody will tell you, you'll know. You don't have to sit there on edge all the time, refresh, refresh, refresh. People like this, they remind me of people that buy their first Bitcoin. You know, they buy like $300 worth of Bitcoin, and they look at the price every 5 minutes, and then they email you because it went down or it went up 5 points. You're like, oh, man, I got a movie for you about selling stocks. It's called Boiler Room. You need to watch, because I didn't know I pitched the bitch, right? Lots of movie references today. It's not going to matter. But what it can do is show you what is likely to happen. So the reason we pay attention to what's going on around us is so we know what the rest of society is doing. My wife and I are talking about this right now. And she's like, you've said that the situation we're in, if Kamala Harris gets elected, you're more concerned than you already are for the country, but you still won't vote. Well, because I don't believe that my vote will matter. I live in a state, Texas, that Trump will carry. That's just the nuts and bolts of it. But the other side of it is I'm not worried about me and what I want. I don't want any of them. What I'm looking at, though, is a situation where I just read a survey today. The same polls that said Harris is ahead nationally, the same people were asked this question. Do you consider pricing at the grocery store a serious problem for you? Like it's seriously impacting your life. 68% said yes. Okay. You're going to vote for the person who gave you that, who's had power for almost 4 years, and you think you're getting somebody new. Okay. This is a collective mental illness. I ain't worried about the people like me that aren't voting. Of the people that are voting, I'm not worried about the majority of them that are voting for something different than we have. I accept those people are mostly in the matrix. They believe in the system. I don't. That's fine. I will work with them when I have to and stay out of their way. But when I look at like this group of people over here and they're like, we're going to vote for her because she's a woman, right? And you just said you can't afford to feed your fucking family and you're going to vote for the policies that created that. Yes, I'm worried about society. And that tells me that we have a much bigger problem than government. I'm more worried about what people are going to do, because these same people are going to be the ones that are going to be like tearing the walls down off supermarkets in a few years, because they thought they were getting pricing controls or whatever stupid bullshit that they thought they were going to get. I'm worried about them. I'm worried about them as an awake person. So that means that I need to read the room and start thinking about, like, do I want to live here for the rest of my life? I think I'm in a really defensible position. But like I said lately, there are some times Dorothy and I look at some places and go, that seems like it might be a better option. That might be a better plan B. Because even though we're out in the country, we're also only 20 minutes away from downtown. And that has good and bad. So it isn't that your attention on it is important, but what your attention is on can tell you what's going to be. And what you need to worry about is more about you and what you do and what you build than to worry about what somebody else thinks or does, because you're not going to fix it for them. And I, man, I've talked to so many of y'all. I know, man, my brother, he just doesn't get it. He's not going to. I'm sorry. You have to, like, you love your brother as your brother, but you have to ride him off as somebody that can be awakened until he is ready. Because I would just ask you, before you were, was there anything anybody could have said to you? Go back to whoever you were before you woke up to the way our money is created, controlled, manipulated, and its supply expanded. Go back to whoever you were before you realized, yeah, we probably shouldn't be using seed oils as human food. Go back to whoever you were when you believed that building your diet on grain and sugar was actually a good idea. All of the areas that we talk about. Go back to who you were when you didn't store any extra food, any extra money. You didn't have guns and extra ammo, right? Go back to whoever you were at that point and ask yourself, if you had met me, not even as a podcaster. In fact, it probably would have been better if you heard me as a podcaster. In real life, if we met in a bar, we started talking, and I started talking about all that shit to you. No matter how much I knew, no matter how well I presented it, would it have gotten through to you? And if you're honest, you'll probably say no. And if you're saying yes, you've probably in your mind moved to the point where you were ready to hear it. Go back another year or two. It wouldn't. So why would it work on your brother? Because he's your brother? Is he not human because he's your brother? You know, if he gets hit by a car, will he be impervious to injury because he's your brother? It doesn't work that way. In the end, guys, can we still wake people up at this point? The answer is no. I've talked about the subject many times over the years, and the answer is always no. We can't wake anybody up. I don't even think we should try. What I think we should do is recognize those who are waking up and aid them in the process. Think of it like a sleepwalker. You know, you kind of guide the sleepwalker along, kind of put them back to bed, except in this case, you put them on the couch and go, hey, Bill, hey, what's going on, man? What were you dreaming about? So that's the way to think about this. Like, the way when you wake up, it's usually a dream process. Think about how when you wake up in the morning, most people, you're not like dead asleep, soundless sleep, and you wake up. Now, if the alarm goes off and wakes you up, maybe you were. But when you sleep in on the weekends, or if you're, you know, I don't use an alarm clock. I wake up about 6:30 every morning. I just wake up and I'm like, I think I'm going to sleep 15 minutes extra today. And after about 5 minutes, I go, so that's not going to happen. And I get up. Inevitably, most mornings when I wake up, and often you'll forget it right away, but you were actually dreaming as you woke up. As consciousness began to reassert itself over your body and you were still asleep, your mind began to process whatever you'd worked out through your dreaming in the night, whatever happened the day before, whatever you're thinking of this morning. And you, like, sometimes it's you know, you, did I shut that off? Like, you wake up like that, you freak out. And that's usually because you were dreaming. And if you actually want to get the most out of whatever that dream was, and it's hard to do, but the exercise is to stop right that second. Don't move. Don't even twitch your finger and replay what you can remember of the dream in your head a couple times before you move. And then you'll often be able to recall the meat of the dream. When a person's waking up to reality in this world, to the fact that not everything's super, that no, we can't go on like this forever, that yes, we're destroying our farmland, that yes, we're eating poison, that yes, we're giving children type 2 diabetes before they get a driver's license. I mean, I don't understand how anybody trusts a medical establishment when we have obese children today, when we have people with diabetes who are 12 years old and younger, and they're not type 1. Medicine and big food led to this, but they're not ready yet. But when the person begins to wake up, they're processing whatever that is. Have that conversation. You don't use these words. It's an analogy, because I know there's people out there take things literally, and we'll go do it, Jake. Don't say what is your dream, but basically what were you dreaming of? That's the question. That's the way you explore it. If you are listening to someone tell you about their dream, you know what you never do? No, you're wrong. The tree in your dream wasn't a spruce tree. It was an oak tree. You know that you don't know. It wasn't your dream. It was their dream. When people start to wake up and you're like, no, let me tell you what really happened. See, the Rothschilds got in bed with the, you know, no. This is the same. This is across the board, too. It's not just about waking up. Like, people that come to prepping, I remember one of the biggest mistakes I ever made with prepping. It was around Y2K, and I've always been a little bit of a prepper, even back then. And Y2K, I knew was bullshit, right? But my wife, like, goes, well, maybe there is something. And she said, well, maybe you should get a few jugs of water. I said, nah, that'll never be enough. I should have went out and got a few jugs of water. The second I said it, I was like, even back then, young and stupid, like, man, that was dumb. Whatever they're willing to take the step with, take that step with them. And that's all you can do. And you'll find yourself, if you take what I said today to heart, you're going to be a much happier person. I mean, I'm telling you right now, there's things that my whole life, I was sure I knew. And the one day I found out, maybe you're wrong. There's things that, like, conspiracy theories that I was like, man, I don't even know what it is, but I know it's something, and it probably has to do with the CIA, and Lee Harvey Oswald actually went to Cuba. And, like, in the end, when I watched a documentary that explained that, yeah, it probably was Oswald, and maybe all that other shit was going on, but the killing shot probably came from a Secret Service agent in the car behind Kennedy, who did it on accident because he freaked out, should have never had a gun in his hand in the first place, because he wasn't the guy that actually did that for Secret Service. He was a driver, and that was it. The only reason he had the gun is because his buddies were out getting drunk and banging whores in a whorehouse, literal whorehouse, till 6 a.m. that day. So they handed him, this is the guy who, like, polished the car and drove it. But they gave him the gun. He stood up and accidentally fired the last shot and popped Kennedy in the head, right? But do I try to convince most of you that? And I brought it up. I put it on the air once, and I said, it's on you. Go look up the documentary. Because I watched the documentary, and I went, damn it. I think that's what happened. And actually, that conspiracy theory is now boring to me. It's boring to me because now I know how it ends. I think some people don't want to know how things end because it ruins their thing. That's just a little aside. You know, the final thoughts, guys, what you do in your life to get what you want is more important than any conspiracy theory. If right now you're hammering out an email to me about how I'm stupid and there was a guy on the grass, you know, and all, you're missing the whole fucking point. What I'm telling you is, after I watched that documentary and said, regardless of all the other crazy shit that happened, this also probably happened, I went, I can put that to bed now. In the end, it doesn't really matter who killed JFK. Who killed JFK will not take care of and feed my ducks. It will not help my grandson grow his podcast. It will not help my granddaughter grow the business that she's starting. It won't do that. It won't convince my, you know, family that I'm right. It won't matter. What will matter is what I do for my business and my family. And it's way more important than waking people up. Because let's finish with the reason you think it's important to wake people up. We live in a perpetual state of fallacy in this freedom, liberty space, that if we just wake up, enough people will hit that critical mass. The boulder will roll down the hill. The Bitcoin citadels will come, and all will be great. You know what? Humanity's been here for hundreds of thousands of years, no matter what you believe. At least several hundred thousand years. Modern humans that you would recognize, except they had long-ass hair and they didn't have hairdressers, walked this planet. It hasn't happened yet. It's probably not going to, not anytime soon anyway. So all we can do is worry about the things we actually can focus on, to the point that we can either control or influence. There are three spheres around every being. There's a sphere of control, the things you actually can manipulate, you can actually make a decision about, you can actually do something with. Then you have a much smaller sphere. It looks bigger, but it's got a little gap. It's like an atmosphere around a planet, okay? And that's your sphere of influence. Those are people who your actions, your words, your deeds, you can't control them, but they actually care what you think, and they actually will consider something just because you said it. That is actually a much smaller sphere than you think it is. The person you, a lot of people you think are in that sphere of influence, they're like, okay, Jack, yeah, yeah. But they've learned what I've said. Like, I can't convince him, he can't convince me. I'll just nod my head and then talk about, you know, football game on Sunday or something. And then you have what's so big, if we're going to go with planets, and like Earth is your sphere of control, the atmosphere, right, is your sphere of influence. You know what your sphere of concern is? It's not the whole solar. It's like beyond. It's the exosolar. It's like Oort cloud. It's the Oort cloud. That's how big what you're concerned about is, and you have no influence on it whatsoever. You have to let go. All right, guys, with that, I'm going to wrap up. Hope you enjoyed today's show. I want to remind you guys, one of the ways you can always support the show is do your online shopping at tspaz.com. That's T-S-P-A-Z, tspaz.com. Today's item of the day, I'm bringing it around again from last week because a ton of you guys have picked these up. They're a great deal. It is Vivor's rechargeable LED headlamp, and it's a two-pack. Yes, a two-pack. So you get two of these for about $16, plus another 5% off with my discount code that's in the write-up. They allow you to have either a very bright 230-degree angle view from an LED light bar, or you can switch over to a spotlight if you want a focused beam. And, man, these things are bright. My wife, last night I had this on, I was taking the dog out to put the ducks to bed, and I walk across the room. She says, man, that thing's bright. Get that out of my eyes. These are absolutely awesome. Again, they're rechargeable. They recharge with USB-C. They're IPX4 waterproof. That means rainstorms and stuff. Can't go swimming underwater with them, but you know, just about anything short of that or spraying a garden hose right in the port is going to work for them. And at $8, they belong in your vehicle, your console, your glove box, your boat, your toolbox, just about everywhere that they'll fit, which is pretty much anywhere. And they are small and light enough, they easily will fit in a cargo pocket for EDC. And another thing I like about them is based on the way they're designed, there's really no up or down. So if you're a left-handed person, you can wear that on your head here, and you can have your controls on your left side or your right side. Either way will work out if I can get it right there. Anyway, they're just awesome. Like, I am always really careful when I recommend product from Vivor. They make some amazing stuff, some okay stuff, and some crap. Some absolute crap, and this is not crap. This is damn good for the money. $8 a piece. Get a two-pack for $16. What more do you want? With that, let's see if I have a few comments and questions. I think I have a couple super chats and one question. Austin says, how do we handle those in active denial? I ask because my in-laws are watching the system they have held dear crumble around them, and we can't have a rational discussion. Bro, they're not ready yet. I understand what's happening. They see it all coming apart, and they want to hold it together, and they're still in the place where they can hold it together. Let me go back to the five stages that happens when a person wakes up and see if anybody can clue in on what I based it on when I built it, right? There's another thing that I built it on, another very well-known concept, Messiah complex, then a feeling that everything is worse than it is, seeking an easy answer, a solution, a hope someone can fix it, then a panic followed by following extreme voices, and then they either wash out or mature into reality. I know it's not a direct correlation, but it's the five stages of grief, right? It's a Messiah complex is denial. It's not denial of the problem. It's denial that the problem can't be fixed. It's now I have a solution. I got to go tell everybody, right? Everything seems worse than it is. Sounds a lot like depression, doesn't it? Doesn't it, right? Looking for an easy answer, that sounds a lot like, you know, bargaining. Like, basically, it's we follow these cycles in life. And rather than having woke up, they right now, these people you're talking about, Austin, they are like people with a cancer diagnosis. Except the cancer diagnosis is not their body. It's the thing that they hold dear. And they are in denial. They're in denial. And what comes after denial? Anger. Yeah? Anger. So they're going to have to get at least past denial and anger to even consider having a conversation. They're going to have to get somewhere toward the bargaining stage. And that bargaining is either going to be, hey, the bargain I'm going to make is we're going to step out, or I think we can fix it. If they think they can fix it, at stage four, and instead of moving on to acceptance, which is stage five, right back to the beginning. Right back to the beginning. I'm betting that they probably are people that, you know, if I had to guess, I'd say they probably lean left, consider themselves independents. Tell me if I'm wrong, bro. And now they're seeing all this crazy shit with, like, transing kids and stuff, and it doesn't make any sense, and I can't go to this side, or, you know, something like that. They probably have jobs in something that is connected directly to the system, and they have to accept that that's a lie, too, and they're just not ready. And you're not going to do it. Legacy Farm and Homestead threw me a $5 super chat. Thank you, sir. Said, we need a new homeschooling episode. That is one of the best ways to get us connected from the system. Maybe when I get back from Self-Reliance Festival. That's going to take some work for me to do a new episode on that. And I am kind of in, I need a reboot. I really do. There may be some more rewinds in the next couple days or weeks until I get through that trip. And John Boy says, here's $20. You and your wife have a drink on me. Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. I really do. I really appreciate that. Thank you. That's it. I see no more questions that have come in since then. I appreciate you guys tuning in with me today. And I hope that episodes like this are not depressional. You know, like, they don't cause depression. I hope they don't make you feel like there's nothing you can do. Because not being able to reach people who don't want to be reached is not the same as nothing that you can do. Those are very, very different things. There's nothing you can do for those people, but there's plenty that you can do for yourself and maybe in a way for those people. Because, like, my wife and I have talked about, like, if we ever did decide to pick up and move again, I know that my son and daughter-in-law aren't coming. I know they're not. My wife likes to think about that being a possibility because it makes her more comfortable with thinking about the reality that we're even considering it. But I look at it this way. If they ever need to, they'll have a place. That's all I can do. Like, I can't wake up my daughter-in-law, my son. Trust me. See, this is what I can tell you, that you're not going to do it. Right? I bet some of you would think, if I could just get my friend to talk to Jack Spirico. No. No. And I would probably have a better chance of waking your friend up than my own son. A prophet has no honor in his own country. It's true. Most of you, the thing is, the people you're trying to reach, you're too close to them. And your parents forget about it. Like, there's some things I disagree with Dave Ramsey about, but one place I really agree with Dave Ramsey is convincing your parents of things that they assume they know more about, like money they're not going to listen to you about, is what Dave brings up. He calls it powdered butt syndrome. Powdered butt syndrome. And what he simply means by that is, if somebody ever changed your shitty diaper, powdered your ass, and put you in a clean diaper, it is not impossible, but it is very hard for that person to accept that the being that they once could hold in a single hand, that they gave life to, that they did everything for, that wouldn't have survived without them protecting them, feeding them, and taking care of them, could possibly know something this big that they don't, even if it's true. And everything else, your cousin, your uncle, your father's former college roommate, whatever, right? Your college nephew's former roommate. The closer they are, the more that lines up. Not exactly the same, but it's still, it can't be you. It can't be you. You see somebody on TV and they're like, man, I used to be in the music industry and I toured with, you know, Whitesnake or something. You're like, oh, that's interesting. And then you have a friend who actually, like, you met him when you're in your 50s and he's like, yeah, man, I was in a band back in the 80s and we toured with Whitesnake. You're like, no, you didn't. I mean, be honest, that's your first, unless you know this dude legitimately toured with some big names and shit. If it never came up before, your first response is, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. But if it was some stranger, you'd be like, I probably did. Probably did. That's what you're dealing with, guys. Anyway, with that, I will catch you tomorrow with an interview. We are bringing back the Backwoods Butcher, and we're going to be talking about processing your own meat as a producer, either for yourself or as someone who's actually producing for others, and the need for less restriction and more freedom in the world of actually processing protein for sale to others. So don't miss that one. It'll be great. I'll catch you guys tomorrow with that.
said you should have a house the American way. A dollar down, a dollar a month, and you'll never have to pay. There's a better way to do this. Let me show you a better way.